Moore.
And I'm Colin Lapp.
And you're listening to
Press Coverage, V2's own American football podcast.
Touchdown!
Hello and welcome to Press Coverage, the V2 American football podcast, and also the fastest growing American football podcast in the United Kingdom. The NFL is back, and it was back with an almighty bang, with several teams making the impact they so desired on the opening weekend of the season. We have a heck of a lot to get through tonight, including a week one review, a look ahead to this week coming, and also a look at the biggest game of the year so far in terms of college football, that is, a thrilling new Kevin Cadle feature, plus an interview with a San Francisco 49ers player, coming up very shortly. But first, I will welcome my regular co-host to the show. Colin, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
Excellent. So, we'll make a start on looking back at last weekend's games, and we'll start with your team, the San Francisco 49ers. We both tipped the 49ers to win this game last week, and indeed they did. In terms of scoring, it was pretty close, but 49ers, for me, always looked in control, and in all honesty, there was one standout man. Now, you know, I've talked at length about Michael Crabtree this, Michael Crabtree that, oh, they're going to miss him, you're going to miss him, you'll need him. But in evidence of Anquan Boldin's performance on Sunday night, I don't think you really missed Crabtree at all. He did only have one touchdown, but he caught everything that was thrown at him, literally everything. He seemed to be there to make the catch. Even passes that you didn't even see on the screen, he somehow made it there to catch. So, certainly, I'm not a 49ers fan. I don't really like the 49ers, just put it out there. But if I was a 49ers fan, I'd be absolutely thrilled with the performance of Anquan Boldin and also thrilled with that victory over the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a good start in week one. 49ers have a really tough schedule to start off with. Obviously, to play the Packers and the Seahawks 2 weeks in a row, and you know, in big time games, I mean, it's a tough early start. But obviously, getting off to a winning start against Aaron Rodgers isn't easy, because regardless of that sort of much vaunted Packers defense, he can put up points in a hurry. And I think the 49ers defense sort of held him quite well. And what I also think was interesting, to be honest, the 49ers didn't really play that well at all, and we still managed to be pretty comfortable overall and win the game. Because we missed tackles, so many penalties in terms of delay of game, just not managing the clock properly. And yet, the run game was completely shut down, and obviously that's the personality of the 49ers. And yes, the Packers kind of keyed in on that because of what happened to them last time, where they were just embarrassing against the run. But it just shows you what it's like to have a great quarterback like Colin Kaepernick. You shut down the run game, you talk about a balanced attack, you need that, but we didn't have a balanced attack. The run game was terrible, and yet Kaepernick still just carved up that Packers defence. So I think it was sort of another sign of progress from Kaepernick. It just showed that some people wrongly still think he's just a running quarterback. Well, you know, he's in some ways you could say out-dueled Aaron Rodgers, in the sense that it really did turn into an offensive game, because both defences weren't that good, although they sort of limited the points. So yeah, a good start in week one, as you said, Anquan Boldin. The guy was just everywhere, just any time he needed to make a play, any time on third down where we needed a big completion, it seemed to go to Boldin, which, considering that was his first competitive game with the 49ers, there must be a big level of trust between Colin Kaepernick and him already. I mean, Crabtree, obviously, I want him back, because he's a different type of receiver to Boldin, although there are some similarities. Crabtree's more of a outside-the-numbers guy. But what Boldin done in the slot, considering he's such a big body as well, I don't see when he's on form how teams will stop him. And last year in the playoffs with the Ravens, he was just untouchable at times. And a lot of people said that was rare, because during the season it was sort of average. Well, he's sort of kept up his postseason form for last year immediately with the 49ers. So I'm hoping that continues, because as you say, he's a very difficult matchup, because he can play everywhere. He's really not fast, but he seems to be more tricky than fast, and hopefully him and Vernon Davis and Kyle Williams and all these guys can form quite a good partnership. And Vance McDonald, the rookie tight end, hopefully he's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the signs are certainly looking good for the 49ers, and as I mentioned, we've got an interview with the 49ers player, and now it seems like the perfect time to bring that in. And I say, we've got a an interview. It's actually Colin had an interview with a 49ers player because I was away on soccer ball duty. So, Colin, I'll let you give a wee bit of info and introduce what you've got for us.
Yeah, so the interview was with Dan Scuta, who is a linebacker slash fullback, I believe, even though I've not seen him take much snaps there. But mainly he's a special teams ace for the 49ers. First year with the team, he played for the Cincinnati Bengals for a few years, was considered a standout there. And I know a lot of 49ers fans were quite upset when Blake Costanzo left for the Chicago Bears because he was sort of a special teams leader with the 49ers. So Dan was brought in, sort of seen as a replacement for him, and he's already looked pretty good. He's seen as a leader, and he had quite a few nice tackles on special teams against the Packers. And obviously, if he's the leader and he's one of the better players, special teams played well. So he definitely had an impact there, and it was really nice to talk to him. And he also mentioned to me it's his first time when he comes to London in October. It'll be his first time ever outside of America, so he's really excited, and he seems to like the UK perspective on American football, so it was nice to talk to him.
Yeah, so have a listen to that now.
I'm delighted to be joined by 49ers linebacker and special teams ace Dan Scuta. How are you, Dan?
I'm awesome, man.
Yeah, so as I say, you guys got off to a wonderful start last night. How are you feeling? Are you too banged up, or are you feeling pretty good?
I feel really good. That was one of our goals for this season, to win the opener, and we got that done last night. So I'm extremely happy about that.
Yeah, and as you say, it's important to get off to a winning start. How tough did you expect the game to be? I mean, did it sort of live up to what you expected?
It actually wasn't really what I expected. It was a little bit of a shootout, and I didn't really expect that at all. But I'm happy with the outcome, and you never know how the team's gonna be, in the opener. So anytime you get a win, it's good.
Yeah. And what was your mindset? I mean, obviously you guys were giving a big test in week one. Do you like facing the best at the earliest possible date?
Well, in week one, you always just want to be fundamentally sound and do a good job of doing your job, and just if you don't make mistakes in week one, you're usually all right, and I think we did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I'd agree. And obviously you have a role to play both on defense and special teams. How do you think the two phases of the game, how do you think that went last night?
I felt like we did a good job on both those phases. I think there's always room for improvement. But I think we did a good job.
Yeah, and as you say, beating the Green Bay Packers is a big statement. But, I mean, you guys, I know you don't want to look too far ahead, but you have a huge test next week too, away at the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, do you think there'll be a big difference in the game planning?
What did you say?
Yeah, obviously you started off against the Green Bay Packers, but next week you have a huge test against the Seattle Seahawks. And
yeah. They
did a pretty good job at home to the 49ers last season. Do you think there will be a big change in the game plan?
I wasn't here last year, so I don't know exactly how things went last year for the game plan and whatnot. I imagine we'll have a pretty good plan for them. Our coaches do a great job of getting us ready, and you're right, they're a great team, just like Green Bay, and we're going to have something good to be able to, win the game. So I hope we have a good game plan for it. I know we will.
Yeah, and one of the other big things that people talk about Seattle is the crowd noise, how loud all the fans are. I mean, obviously you've played in loud environments before. How do you think the team will prepare themselves for that sort of noise?
That's mostly an offensive thing. They're going to be loud when our offense is out there. And they do things like play music during practice really loud, or play some kind of crowd noise, on the speakers at practice, and kind of just to simulate the noise that they're going to have. And it's tough to do because it's definitely loud up in Seattle. I've played there before, and it's a lot of fun with that kind of crowd. I think, you know, to be in that kind of environment, it's definitely fun. And, you know, there's a little bit of a rivalry there with the Seahawks, so it'll be rocking in there.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the fact that you're pretty new to the 49ers organization. Obviously, you were with the Cincinnati Bengals before. So what are some of the differences you've noticed between the Bengals and the 49ers? Are there anything that stand out?
There's a lot of differences. With the way the organization is and the way practice is structured and the schedule for the week. There's good things about both of them, and I'm just happy to be a part of both of them. And, you know, at the end of the day, football is still the same. You know, you're going out there and you got to beat the guy in front of you, so it's the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, do you think there's a different talent level on the 49ers, or do you think both teams are playoff contenders?
Both teams are very good. You know, we had some great players in Cincinnati, and there's some great players here.
I should have mentioned that was actually from a Bengals fan. I have some questions for you from NFL UK, which is sort of our website for all UK-based NFL fans. Another question I have for you is, and it's quite an interesting one actually, obviously there has been a lot of talk about Colin Kaepernick and the fact that he's such an athletic quarterback, but I'd imagine that he is wrapped up in cotton wool in practice. So how do you guys practice to defend the read option?
Oh yeah, it's definitely a blessing that we're able to practice against Colin and offense every day. And I feel like that prepares us, you know, to face that kind of scheme, which can be extremely hard to defend. It definitely helps, you know. Against not only the fact that they run that kind of scheme, but just the level of players that we have on the offense makes it nice to compete, because when you compete against players like that every day, it makes it easier on Sunday, you know what I mean? So it's definitely nice that we get to do that. I've never been as prepared for the read option as we are here, so I feel good about that.
Yeah, and obviously Colin had a great game yesterday. I mean, what did you think of his performance?
He's a great competitor, he's a great quarterback, a good leader, you know. That's kind of as be expected from him, I would say, you know, as the leader of the team and the quarterback of a good team, you know.
Yeah, and another question we have, that one was from Buccaneer95. This question is from a 49ers fan, Piemaster. He was interested in Eric Reid, obviously the rookie safety. He was wondering what veterans like yourself thought of Eric's first performance in a competitive game.
Oh yeah, I was extremely impressed with Eric. Going into the game, I really wasn't sure of how he would do. You know, it's a rookie out there; you never know how they'll do in their first game. And he went out there and was, you know, really, really good. I don't know if I've ever seen a rookie play that good in an opener game. My standpoint, I don't know exactly how he did all game, but I thought he played excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are saying the same thing. I mean, he does like to hit, doesn't he? He's a very hard hitter, so I think that will fit in with the 49ers' personality well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a hard worker, and he does a great job of tackling in space, which you want that on your safeties. You know, it's a great attribute to have, and I'm happy we had him back there.
Yeah, and one of the other questions we have, quite an easy one for you, I guess. So what's your schedule like now for the rest of the week? Will you be back in the 49ers facilities tomorrow?
Yep. We have today off, and then tomorrow we'll go back and review the game and get the game plan for next week and get rolling on Seattle.
Yeah, and obviously you said you reviewed the game yesterday. I mean, Do you think there were any weaknesses as such? Is there anything that stands out that you could improve on?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things you can always improve on. You know, the first game is always hard because, you know, you never know what they're going to do. You never know how things are going to work out. You got a couple of, for the most part, our defense is, you know, made up of guys that have been here. But, you know, there's some things on special teams and offense where there's new guys in new places. So there's always things you can improve on.
Yeah, and do you think there's anyone else that could emerge for the 49ers in the coming weeks? Any guys we didn't see much of yesterday?
You never know in the NFL. That's the great thing about it. There could be a guy at any given point during any week that goes out and has a great game. And, hopefully that'll be me.
Yeah, of course. Another question we have, this one's actually from Twitter. Just the question that's being asked is, when you played for the Bengals, what team did you most enjoy facing? And has that changed since you came to the 49ers?
What team did I enjoy beating?
Yeah. The question was...
I enjoyed when we played against Baltimore. Baltimore was great competitors. We always had good games with them, so that was a lot of fun playing those guys. And, this is my first year here, so I don't know. It sounds like Seattle will be going to be a fun game, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and you mentioned Baltimore. Obviously, surprisingly, they went down quite heavily on Thursday Night Football. Were there any other Week 1 results in the NFL that shocked you?
The Baltimore game is the one that I really got to watch the most, you know, from the time difference and stuff out here. I didn't get to watch a whole lot of the other games. But that was definitely a surprising one. This league is a crazy league. You know, I thought Carolina played pretty well against Seattle, and I was a little surprised with that too, so you just never know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you mentioned Denver, Peyton Manning throwing seven passing touchdowns is pretty incredible. I mean, a lot of people are saying they think the passing records could go even higher this year. As a defender, is that something that concerns you?
Yeah, well, you know, it's turning into that kind of league where it's a passing league now, so it's always going to be up for grabs out of the hot quarterbacks of that year.
Yeah, and do you think your role as a defender has changed in the last few years because of the way the league is going?
My role?
Yeah, do you think it's changed?
Absolutely. You know, I started out as kind of a big middle linebacker, kind of a run stopper, you know, and they really don't need guys like that as much anymore, so you got to be able to adapt, and I lost a little weight, you got to be able to play the pass now, you know, you got to be a good pass defender and a good athlete. And that's definitely changed the way people have trained in the offseason and the way coaches think and all that.
Yeah, and obviously you said you're a middle linebacker. Just how good are Patrick Willis and Navarre Bowman? Would you agree that they are the best at their position?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're great players. They can do anything you ask them to do, cover, play the run, they're definitely special guys in there.
Yeah, and this question, you might have an opinion on it, you might not. Obviously, you guys had Lawrence Okoye, who was a British Olympian, and a lot of guys were interested to see how he has done with the 49ers. I know right now his position is sort of up in the air, but what did you think of Lawrence? Did you see much of him?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Lawrence has a lot of potential. It was his first time ever playing football, and it's American football. And, it's definitely something that, I've been playing for 19 years.
Yeah.
I've been playing for a long time, so there's a million things that I've seen and done that he hasn't done. And for never playing, he's an excellent job. And, you never know, he could turn out to be something really special.
Yeah, well, I suppose the raw athletic traits are there. I think he only trained.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he only trained a few years for obviously the sport he performed in the Olympics, and he did pretty well. So That's definitely a good sign. But it's a tough one. Some of the other questions we have for you obviously revolve around the Clay Matthews incident. I mean, as a linebacker, do you think Clay Matthews took it far with Colin Kaepernick?
Sorry, say it again?
Yeah, obviously one of the sort of big issues for today is the late hit out of bounds from Clay Matthews to Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as a defender yourself, did you think that was uncalled for?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a little bit of a thing going there, growing throughout the week with Colin and Clay.
Yeah, well, I know Joe Staley went running over. I think Anquan Boldin might have tried to stop him, but yeah, Joe Staley was over there very, very quickly.
Yeah, you know, that's the way the offensive line thinks, you know, you're not going to mess with a quarterback.
Yeah, and I suppose the 49ers O-line is pretty nasty, so yeah, they're big guys.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, and as we say, you're playing Seattle next week, and that is turning into one of the biggest rivalries in, you know, in the NFL. Do you see them as your main contenders in the division?
You know,
hello?
Sorry,
No.
You gotta prepare every week for whoever you're playing, and you gotta always think that the next person's gonna be, you know, good.
Yeah. And obviously, special teams next week. The special teams practice. I mean, can you tell us anything you think the special teams will do differently next week, or do you think any change in the game plan?
Oh, I'm sure we'll have something for them. I don't know what, though.
Yeah. Well, I think last season there was a few surprises, a few fake punts, few different things, so hopefully that'll be the case. But, yeah. And obviously you're considered a leader on the team. I mean, you know, you're considered one of the veterans, one of the special teams' aces. Do you enjoy that leadership role, being looked at as sort of a guiding figure? Yeah. Well, obviously, that's it. And I guess, do you think it's Super Bowl or bust for the 49ers this year, considering how good they have been the last few years?
Well, you know, that's definitely one of our goals, is to make it there. You know, you got to take it one game at a time, but overall, I would definitely say that's definitely a goal.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks a lot for talking to me, Dan, and I should probably give you a chance. Are you on Twitter, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can give your Twitter a shout out if you want some more followers.
Oh, yeah. Follow me I'm at dstuna51 on Twitter. And, you know, definitely follow me for updates on the 49ers and how my season's going.
Yeah, so pretty interesting stuff there from Dan Scuta, and just going back to the game between the 49ers and the Packers, there was certainly one incident which you mentioned there, and that was the tackle. It was more of an assault more than anything by Clay Matthews and Colin Kaepernick. I mean, as a 49ers fan, a big fan of the quarterback, what did you make of Matthews hitting him like that?
It's a tough one, because it, in some ways it looks worse than it is, obviously, when you break it down in slow motion. Because obviously you're all of a sudden everything sort of heightened, and that when you look at it from that viewpoint, it looks as if Matthews is still trying to grab a hold of him about 5 yards out of bounds. When I first watched it, I didn't think it was bad, but the point is, I don't think it was that terrible a hit after I've seen it more and more, but what I didn't like was that he didn't let it go as he went further out of bounds, and also he seemed to be targeting the sort of neck area. which it doesn't matter if he was on the field. You don't tackle someone at that height. It's a penalty immediately. Why do you tackle a quarterback at the head? It's not a natural move. Colin Kaepernick's about 5 inches taller than him anyway, probably, so it just seems really weird to be targeting that. And obviously it's suspect because of the comments that Clay Matthews made before the game about, you know, the Packers' defence is going to hit them hard, etc. So it doesn't seem like he has much of an alibi. But, I don't like it. But at the same time, I suppose you're always going to get bad hits. But what annoyed me more about Clay Matthews is, and I suppose it's the case with quite a few players on teams, it's just the trash talking. Like, Kaepernick smiled at him and he didn't really seem to care too much. But he sacked Kaepernick when his team were down, so the Packers were losing. Yet he gets in his face and tells him about it. It's like, mate, you're in the fourth quarter, you're losing the game. Why are you trash talking, try and get back and win the game? So it's just, people like him annoy me. But then the thing is, he likes to play the villain, and he is a really good player. So I think he'll be quite happy to be sort of disliked by everyone.
You know what I thought of it anyway? I mean, when watching it live, I went ballistic when it happened. I was calling for ejections and all sorts. But as you said, when you've seen it back a few times, you do realise that perhaps it wasn't that bad, certainly. But it was naughty, I think we can say, from Clay Matthews. You mentioned yourself, the height, the way he jumped in, the fact Kaepernick was clearly already off the field before he even thought about, well, he obviously thought about doing it before he actually made the motion to make the challenge. It was just a bit nasty, a bit naughty from Matthews, but he certainly made the impact that he said he was going to make. But Kaepernick, he said he smiled at him. He'll have been laughing at the end of the game because the 49ers obviously got the win. That sets him up nicely for the rest of the season. Now, the first game of the weekend was one I predicted absolutely horrendously wrong. I think I said the Ravens would defeat the Broncos by a couple of touchdowns, clear touchdowns, something like that. In the end, I mean, the Broncos, more like Peyton Manning, just played an unbelievable game and 7 touchdown passes in the game. I don't think anyone really saw that coming, especially against the reigning Super Bowl champions to concede so many points. But the Ravens, I said last week, don't write them off, don't do this, the other thing. I'm beginning to have my doubts. I know it's only one game, and they scored pretty well themselves, but they just lost the better team on the day. But they looked a shadow of a former selves. I'm not really sure, having seen them in competitive action, that they do have what it takes to do even half as well as they did last year. I think they were missing those experienced guys. I think they've changed too much. I've said that before. But I did want to give them a chance. But having seen them now on the telly, in the flesh, I just, there's something missing there. But the Broncos, I've continuously predicted them to be winning the Super Bowl at the end of this season. After that performance, what a statement to make, defeating the reigning champions like that. And obviously, another big game for the Broncos coming up this weekend against the Giants. We'll obviously get onto that later. But that gives them another chance to make yet another impact, a huge impact against another potential rival team. But the big story was, of course, Peyton Manning. 7 touchdown passes. The receivers, Wes Welker in particular, Thomas as well, they had an excellent start to the game. That's what Manning would have been wanting to see. And, you know, it's going to take a very good performance to see the Denver Broncos get defeated.
Definitely. You know, going back to the Ravens, it was strange to see them so thoroughly beaten because, you know, for years the Ravens have always been sort of seen as like a machine. If you're going to beat them, it's going to be by a few points. And chances are, if it's a close game, even if they've not played particularly well, somehow they're just going to grind out a win. Almost sort of like the Man United in that sense. We always sort of found a way to do it, but we just didn't really have any answers against the Broncos. And I think the issue was the offense just looked so it just lacked any punch. And obviously it's easy for me to say as a 49ers fan, well done, you get rid of Anquan Boldin, thank you, for a 6th round pick. But I don't see any true sort of greats on that offense. Like, if Torrey Smith is going to be your number one wide receiver, he's a speedster, he's not a complete receiver, he's not a Michael Crabtree, he's not an Anquan Boldin, he's not a Demaryius Thomas or even a Wes Welker. He's a big play threat, and yes, it will have some huge games throughout the season, but I don't see him as a number one option. And in the same way, I just don't see sort of the defence in the same light I did last year. The secondary in particular, I mean, to concede 7 touchdowns, even when it's against Peyton Manning, I mean, that's just not good enough. And I didn't, it was just strange to see it. As you say, the Broncos definitely made a statement. It will take a good team to beat them, but personally, I think you put the 49ers, you put the Seahawks, you put, even to a certain extent, in some ways, if Ridley and everyone's fit, if you put the Patriots against the Broncos, I think we could all beat them simply because I didn't see much of a run game from the Broncos. And the thing is, you can be a great passer all you want and be a hugely prolific passing attack. Look at Aaron Rodgers, it doesn't mean you're always going to win the games. So I'd like to see the Broncos this week against the Giants just to prove it. I think we'll win the game, but I want to see them sort of get the run game established at. Because we know, you know, Peyton Manning's not a dual threat guy. You know, I think he runs like probably like a 7-second 40-yard dash. So we're never going to see that. So I want to see what Monte Ball, No. Sean Moreno, and the other, the name of our other running back slips me right now. But I'd like to see him get involved too.
Yeah. So also, you've mentioned 49ers against the Packers. So that was also the second game on Sunday, and the first one was another one of your favourite teams, the Atlanta Falcons, coming up against the New Orleans Saints, Breeze versus Ryan. What did you make of this one?
I was really impressed by the Saints' defence. When I say really impressed, it was just because in normal situations, I'd say they were pretty good. But the turnaround from last season, although it's just one game under Rob Ryan, who I do think he's a bit of an idiot, a bit of an overrated sort of coach, but as defensive coordinator, sorry. But yeah, I mean, I was impressed. Breeze, don't think he was anything special. Considering we know how Drew Brees can play, don't think he was particularly special. But once again, the Falcons just lack that sort of clutch gene. I mean, they were right pretty much on the goal line almost to win the game. And yet, you've got Roddy White, Julio Jones, Steven Jackson, Tony Gonzalez, the best tight end ever. And you've got 3 or 4 tries to punch a ball in from less than 5 yards out and you can't do it against the Saints' defence, which was ranked the worst ever last year. And there's barely any changes. It was the same story against the 49ers in the playoffs. It's the same story in the past. I just can't help but think Matt Ryan and the Falcons are a great team, but they just lack any punch when it matters a lot of the time.
Well, you say that, and I mean, the last few plays of the game, as you mentioned there, that just sort of sums up exactly what you were saying there. Made all these opportunities to get the touchdown, or should have seen them perhaps going to win the game, who knows. But, I mean, you've got to give the Saints, you mentioned defence there, you've got to give them credit. Even right up until the end, they made sure that the Falcons simply weren't going to get that touchdown at all costs. Kenny Vaccaro, obviously, the young safety rookie, he came in and made, arguably, I don't know how much he knew about it, he got the hand up, he blocked it away from Gonzalez right at the end. But what a way to make an impact in your first ever competitive NFL game. So kudos to Kenny Vaccaro, he stuck in there, he did what matters and saw his team win the game. Matt Ryan had an indifferent game. I mean, I think he's a superb quarterback, one of my favourites, but he makes too many errors and at times he just doesn't quite get it done. I think that was the case again. In terms of the New Orleans offense, I was quite impressed with a few of their guys as well. You mentioned that Breeze didn't have anything special. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I think in terms of receiving, I thought Sproles had a good game. I thought Graham looked impressive as usual. Colson as well. And then rushing, they did all right again. I like what Sproles did rushing as well. And Thomas in there. But I think the Saints are, they look pretty good. Obviously, it was a tough task playing against the Falcons, another teams who've been sort of touted for success, although as you mentioned they're renowned choke artists, so who really knows what to expect from them. But certainly another impressive opening day victory, and this time it's for the Saints. And to round off Sunday's action, it was a game that was always going to be a close one, and it certainly was. It was a high scoring close one as well, as the Dallas Cowboys edged New York Giants by 36 points to 31. How much do you see of this one, and were you surprised with the result?
Not really. I think I said the Giants would win the game, but to be honest, my head was always telling me the Cowboys. It was just a hunch that Eli Manning and the Giants would have to play better, but they didn't. First of all, obviously Stevie Brown's out for the season. The Giants' safeties look awful. The cornerbacks didn't look much better, but just the open lanes for Tony Romo, you know, to pass the ball into, it was unreal. And I just think with the Giants as well, obviously David Wilson fumbled a few times. Eli Manning just looked lost at times. They just weren't good enough. And I don't think the Cowboys played an amazing, amazing game. I just think the Giants were that bad. And yeah, obviously, you know, kudos to the Cowboys for capitalising on the Giants' mistakes and doing well. But honestly, I think the Jaguars could have gave the Cowboys a better game. It was really just, I was shocked at how bad the Giants were. The defence, front seven, weren't too bad. But yeah, overall, just bad, bad, bad from the Giants.
I agree. I mean, you obviously in particular mentioned last week when we were talking about this game, looking ahead to it, you mentioned that Eli Manning hadn't exactly had the best of pre-season outings in his games, and again, he didn't look all there, not in a mental sense, I mean, in terms of the game, obviously, before anyone jumps to conclusions there. But they managed to get in a position to pretty close. I mean, they're trailing 30-24 at one point, so I mean, as bad as they were always there or thereabouts. I mean, they only lost by 5 points in the end, which I think is pretty flattering to them, in all honesty. Victor Cruz, he'll be happy to have a few touchdowns again, but other than that, there's not really many positives. He said the safeties, cornerbacks, the Giants, that's worrying. I mean, obviously they weren't banking on Stevie Brown, one of the most important players last season, getting injured and ruled out for so long. But I wouldn't get too worried for the Giants yet. They're always a team that seems to somehow get the job done, much in the same vein as the mentioned Steelers last time round. But I think what else is concerning is the fact that they conceded two defensive touchdowns as well. Obviously, the last one right at the end there, that sealed their fate. So I think there's certainly a lot of work to be done with the Giants, but I think when Eli Manning returns to form, plays like he is, that'll be a whole weight lifted off their shoulders, because certainly in the Giants' case, when their quarterback plays well, the whole team seems to play well. And as I said, they did only lose by 5 points, so it's not absolutely disastrous, but they've got a lot of work to do if they want to make a challenge for the Super Bowl this year. And at this stage, that's not looking very likely, because there's so many more teams better than them at the moment. Well, that was Sunday, and then came Monday Night Football, which we found out a day or two before was going to be in Eurosport, and I'm sure the fans were all delighted to get a wee bit of golfing action in there as well. And I was absolutely thrilled when I was trying to watch a game of football to see a guy putting in an empty golf course, but we'll leave that for another day. And the first game up was a game that we talked about a wee bit last week, RG3 returning to the field to lead the Washington Redskins against Chip Kelly's Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles started this game, they came out the traps scarily quickly. They just bolted straight down the field, first down after first down, then disaster struck when one of the most bizarre touchdowns you'll see really from D'Angelo Hall, and he went over, and at that stage you're thinking, oh, what's going on here? But the Eagles didn't really let that bother them. You could have been forgiven for thinking it didn't even happen. And my goodness, were they good to watch. It was fast-paced, it was quick, it was unpredictable. Everything we expected, everything that was talked about, everything we're told would be the case of one of Chip Kelly's offences, and he's brought that to the Eagles as well. And Michael Vick, he looked like the player he's meant to be in there, even getting in there after the touchdown himself. So I think there's a lot in there for the Eagles fans to be happy about. I don't think they'll be there or thereabouts in terms of Super Bowl this year, but my goodness, they have a lot to build on. I think it's a very exciting time to be an Eagles fan. Every one of their offensive players and passing plays and rushing, they always look to danger. I mean, there's some teams that you obviously look at, or all teams and plays that are made, you look and think, what are they doing here? This doesn't look exactly great. But that wasn't the case at all. Every time the Eagles' offense lined up, you thought that something good could happen. And in most cases, it did happen for them on Monday night. But the concern for them will be that they had such a commanding lead in the game, and they had a bit of a disastrous last quarter, last sort of stage to the game. RG3 rallied, the Redskins rallied, and weren't that far away from stealing that game. If that game had gone on a couple of minutes or two, obviously it didn't, just because it can't, because you only get four quarters. But, I mean, I think the Eagles will have a bit of concern there on the defensive side, the way the game did end up being so close. And one final point, RG3, I said last week I would have fancied the Redskins big time in this game if he'd been fully fit, if he'd looked himself, and certainly for the early stages of that game, the first couple of quarters, he didn't look the player that we know he can be. He sort of battled back a bit in the second half of the game. But I think the Redskins will probably huff and puff along until he's right up there at his peak again, and hopefully for their sake that won't be too long. But a very good win for the Eagles, and I think it's going to be onwards and upwards for them.
Yeah, I just echo what you've already said. I mean, you know, as someone who'd watched quite a bit of Oregon, and I'm not an Oregon fan in college football, but I enjoy watching them, and I sort of wondered how Chip Kelly would implement a sort of duck-style offense in the NFL. I wasn't sure if it could translate, but, you know, on the basis of one game, which I know it's a bit premature to say it works, but just based on that game alone, the fast tempo, the way he just managed to get everyone out in space, all his playmakers, it looks like an expert. It looks like a bit of a mad genius, but an expert nonetheless. And even the Eagles' defense, which was much criticized last year, I know, you know, the Redskins' offense, I mean, it was a bit, you know, it was useless, to be honest, the first few quarters, but overall, I thought the Eagles put on a great showing. Definitely RG3 looked hesitant. I know John Gruden, obviously, in the studio, he broke down the fact that RG3 wasn't even following through on his throws because it seemed like he was too worried about getting hit. Now, of course, Mike Shanahan, RG3 are going to spin your line about how he's fine and, you know, it's not ring rust, it's just they played better, etc. But I feel like the Redskins definitely looked hesitant because RG3 wasn't putting on the performances we expected last year. But to be fair to the guy, not everyone's superhuman and like Adrian Peterson. When you have a serious, you know, knee injury where it requires your whole knee to be pretty much blown up and put back together again, and let's not forget, this is the second time in his career it's happened, and he's only 21, 22. So I think it will take him, you know, it's only natural it's going to take him a while to come back. But hopefully, you know it soon, because he is a really, really dynamic player and someone who, especially for new fans coming into the NFL, he's the type of the athlete, you know, you want them to see.
Yeah, of course. And, well, that leaves us with one more game that was on the TV at the weekend. This wasn't a Monday night football game, this was a Tuesday morning game. I don't care what anyone says, it finished after 7 o'clock, which meant that I didn't see it live, and I'm pretty glad I didn't, because if I hadn't had sleep before watching the Texans chug along against the Chargers like that, I don't know what I would have done. I got up, I watched the first two quarters, first half, and I thought, what the heck is going on here? I couldn't quite believe how bad the Texans looked. They were being dominated. Every Chargers offensive play seemed to result in a touchdown, and it got to stage where in the third quarter I started fast-forwarding through it to try and avoid the embarrassment of watching the Texans get humiliated. And I still keep looking at the final result, which of course was 31-28 in the Texans' favour. I still can't quite believe we got the result out of that game. And Brian Cushing obviously had the major moment of the game in the last quarter there, scoring his first ever touchdown, I believe, and what a way to do it. A great interception, although you say that it was Philip Rivers, the man of many mistakes, striking yet again, threw the ball straight to Cushing. Texans basically made sure that nobody was going to get near him, and he went over that line, and the rest is history. Field goal went in, and that was it. But my goodness, watching that game as a Texans fan was not pleasant at all. But it's a strange one. So I, as a Texans fan, I don't know quite how to look at this one. Do you look at it in a negative sense, in terms that they get dominated for large stages of that game against a team that isn't really considered a huge threat? Or do you look on the other side of the coin, the positive side, and say they were so far behind that game, yet somehow managed to score so many unanswered points and win the game on the road. At this moment in time, I'm going to look at it with a positive spin, because Mark Shaw, a man who I've criticised week after week on here, I was quite happy with his performance on Sunday. I thought he rallied the team well. To have Brian Cushing back in there was absolutely magnificent, and great to see him get a touchdown as well. And the man himself, JJ Watt, the best defender in all of the NFL, in my opinion, and the expert's opinion last season, happy to say, he didn't really have much of a clear impact if you watched the game, but my goodness, once again, without sort of absolutely stealing the show and blitzing everything, he was a class act yet again, and he made his impact like any good defensive end does, away from the ball. Obviously, if you weren't looking specifically at him, you wouldn't have seen just how good he was, but really, really impressive stuff from him. I'm just relieved more than anything that the Texans got this win, because 28 points to 7 down, that did not look like it was going to happen. But thankfully it did, and hopefully that gives us something to build on against the Titans next week.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's definitely a positive for me. I mean, I think it was just a game plan that, it was awful against the Chargers early in the game. And the thing is, tactically, you can alter that, you can fix that. What you can't fix is the attitude to come from 3 touchdowns down and to still win the game without even taking it to overtime. So for me, I'd be much more, I'd focus so much more on the fact that we were able to have that sort of mentality to just think, just do our thing and we'll get back into the game, and it did. Obviously, you mentioned JJ Watt. Maybe he never showed up in the stat sheet the way you often expect from him. But I saw a tweet from Matt Miller, actually. He was talking about JJ Watt in the same way that Jadeveon Clowney was talked about in college football. Defensive ends are schemed against as much as any position. And when you put 2 or 3 guys on a player, they're not the Hulk. They're not some sort of freak show that can just run through these guys. But the thing is, in the run game, in different sort of different ways, they're always having an impact away from the screen, what you can't see and off the ball. And just for sometimes in that game, obviously because JJ Watt's just a star player in the NFL, I just focused on him, and he was constantly pushing people backwards. So I definitely think we'll see him get back into sort of, the major mega stats in the next few weeks.
Well, I'm certainly hoping so. Now, we obviously don't have time to go through every single game from week one. Obviously, we've still got a lot to get through. But as the Vikings and the Jaguars are both hosting Wembley games, I think it's only fair that we talk about them. And the both of them didn't go off to the start they'd have wanted, but the Vikings, well, even though they didn't get the win, I think everyone was talking about that one man after that game, and two words, Adrian Peterson. 2 touchdowns again. I mean, every time Red Zone comes up when you're watching a game, it always seems to be Adrian Peterson, the Vikings. And once again, as impressive ever. But in terms of the Lions, Reggie Bush in there, he looked impressive also. So I think there's a lot to build on there for the Lions. They're not going to be another team that's going to make major waves this season, but they certainly already look a bit better than they did last time around. Vikings will be disappointed to have lost this game. Ponder maybe not having the best of games again, but as I said, 2 words, Adrian Peterson, that guy is just magnificent to watch.
Yeah, Vikings game, it hurts me to see a player like Adrian Peterson on a team like that, because the thing is, Christian Ponder's just not good enough. Once again, he just sort of makes these mistakes out of nowhere, and so one of the interceptions wasn't his fault, fair enough, but I don't see the Vikings going anywhere good with him at the helm. And when you have a star player like Adrian Peterson, it's hard to see him playing so well. But a lot of the time, it just ends up in nothing. He could rush for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns, and the Vikings could still lose a game. It's really unreal. I just hope, and it might sound harsh on Ponder, in the next draft, if the Vikings can really get hold of one of the star quarterbacks, I'd be going for it. I just don't see where Ponder's going to take this team. As for the Jaguars, you mentioned, and obviously they had a big game at home to the Chiefs. Yeah. Blaine Gabbert. What can you say about Blaine Gabbert? He makes the ridiculous possible. It's unreal. what he does. Like, he does look like just a deer in the headlights. For someone that's 6'5" and however much he weighs and got a big arm, none of the physical gifts ever shine through with him. And then once again, we find out he's injured after the game. Like, what? Just, is that a real injury, or...
Yeah, I mean, the scoreline in that game was obviously 28-2, with the Jaguars only getting a safety. And that is just appalling. There's no way you can look at that. The safety happened right at the start of the game, so basically, if you want to be pernickety, they went through a whole game of football without scoring a proper point, if you will. And yeah, that is just abysmal. Blaine Gabbert is a guy that... because he's been ridiculed so much, I'd just love to see him do well, but it's simply... I mean, you said Christian Ponder's not good enough. Christian Ponder's not good enough. What the heck does that mean Blaine Gabbert is? He's just a deer in the headlights every time. And that interception, I can't remember who he threw it to, but the interception that they kept showing all weekend in Sky, that was one of the worst attempts at a pass I've ever seen from a quarterback at any level. There's high school quarterbacks, there's Pee Wee football passes that wouldn't even be that blatantly bad. The opponent was literally about 3-4 yards away from me, threw it right at him, right into his hands, which were already in the air. What was he thinking?
Yeah, and I think the problem is as well, that was a home game. You know what I mean? Like, you think about this.
I've honestly struggled to get people through the gate sometimes as it is. That's certainly not
the... How would Blaine Gabbert play in an environment where the fans are actually trying to put him off rather than being on his side? It's crazy, and it's disappointing for the Jags fans. They're always hoping, you know, that all of a sudden they won't be terrible. But with Gabbert, and let's be honest, the entire team is not very good. So it's just, yeah, I feel sorry for, not really, but, you know, the Jags are one of those teams that are easy to laugh at, aren't they?
Sadly, at this moment in time, yes. Hopefully come Wembley, though, they'll be a bit better. Well, I certainly won't be holding my hopes out. But anyway, that does it for the review. I'll just go over the games that we didn't get a chance to mention tonight. Obviously, the Buffalo Bills had an impressive outing against the Patriots, ended up losing 23-21. The Titans edged out the Steelers. The New York Jets defeated the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Darrell Revis Derby without their Darrell Revis. The Seahawks edged out the Panthers in a painfully low-scoring game. Chicago Bears defeated the Cincinnati Bengals. The Miami Dolphins got a great opening day win, one that they really need to get over the Cleveland Browns. The Raiders, a team that was probably, well, I said last week, worst roster in league, certainly made the Jaguars the worst roster in league because they ran the Colts pretty close as well, again losing out late on, 21-17. And finally, the St. Louis Rams managed to get the opening day victory over the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday night. So, I mean, all round a pretty entertaining week, don't you think, Colin?
Yeah, week one, obviously. It's interesting because
it doesn't tell you everything yet because teams will still change a lot. But, yeah, any team that gets off to a winning start is always going to be happy. And most of the big teams, you know, obviously it's hard with games like the Packers versus the 49ers because that's involving two big teams. But most of the favourites done pretty well with sort of main, you know, like the Broncos, the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Patriots. No matter how close the games were, they all come out with wins. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as they face better competition, though, in terms of teams like, the Patriots and the Seahawks, because we sort of struggled against teams that we should be expected to win quite convincingly against.
Yes, very interesting indeed. So, week one is now in the bag. We have week two coming up, funnily enough, following week one. Week two will always happen. And now, last week in the predictions, you were pretty convinced you'd absolutely annihilated me, but when I went back and tallied up, I actually found out that we drew 12 points apiece, which isn't too bad. 3/4 of all the games predicted correctly, so we're still both sitting pointless if you want to look at it with a half a glass empty. Thing, and also I'll be coming for you and defeating you by showing my expertise, so please be prepared for that.
Yeah, well, I'll also say 12 is pretty good because seeing the so-called expert sort of things on ESPN and NFL.com, they don't even get like that amount right, so yeah, I think we did pretty good.
Well, let's make sure we do it again. Obviously, we're already pretty much at the hour mark because we had that big interview as well, so we'll try and rattle through as quickly as possible, then review the games next week. Obviously, tonight, if you're listening Thursday, if not, it'll probably have already happened. we'll see the New York Jets with Geno Smith at the helm, now probably without Mark Sanchez, although I believe he's looking at rehab instead of surgery, but they visit the New England Patriots. As much as I dislike the Patriots, I really don't think there's any way they're going to lose this game, and I'm going to go for New England in this game.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the Patriots will win, but I think the spread has the Patriots winning by 11 or 12 points. I think it could be closer than that, closer than expected, but I don't see any way the Jets going to Foxborough and come out with a win.
Next up is the St. Louis Rams, buoyed by that opening day victory that I just mentioned over the Cardinals. They visit the Atlanta Falcons. I think this will be quite a close one. Unless the Rams are looking okay so far. But the Falcons will definitely want to get their first win on the board after losing that pretty close game to the Saints last week. And I do think they will get the win here, and it'll be the Falcons getting their first win of the season.
I'd say the same. You know, the Falcons are very strong at home. I do think the Rams look better. But the thing is, the Falcons didn't play anywhere near their best, and yet, in a hostile environment, they probably should have been able to beat the Saints. So I think unless there's an upset, which is always possible because the Rams are a good team, if Matt Ryan and the defence play the way we know we can, then I think you'll be looking at the Falcons maybe by one touchdown, maybe 10 points.
And next up are two of the teams that played on Monday last week, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles, who this time host the San Diego Chargers in their own back garden. The Chargers will also be really disappointed with how that game against the Texans turned out last week. And I think they're going to go 2-0 in terms of defeats this weekend, because that Eagles with their own fans, they'll be really excited to see this new offense in action. And I can't see any way that the Eagles offense is going to be stopped again this week. And I think they'll score a fair number of touchdowns again. I think they'll maybe win this one again by 10 points or so, but I can't see the Eagles losing this one in their own ground.
Yeah, I'm the same. Obviously, there'll be a big buzz around Chip Kelly and his style of play. Also, the Eagles, you know, playing in Philadelphia, it's quite a hostile environment. And if you're going to give up a 21-point lead at home, I just think mentally that's going to put a lot of strain on the Chargers. And you know what? They have got talent, you know, on the roster, but I just don't see how the Eagles could put on that kind of show against a team that's just sort of, you know, they're just blowing it big time. At home, I don't see how the Eagles can blow that. So, yeah, I'd say the same. Eagles win pretty comfortably.
And then next up, the Cowboys obviously will be delighted with that win over the Giants. A good impact statement they made. They go to Kansas City Chiefs in week two. I think this one's got all the makings of a pretty interesting game, because you've got the Cowboys who are always splitting people down the middle. They're either fancied to do it, they're considered one of the big teams, then the other half people just look at and think, nah, no chance. So they've obviously got to prove these people wrong. And the Chiefs are sort of in the same boat, except they had such a dismal season last year. New coach in there, Alex Smith, now at quarterback. They probably feel they need to make an impact as well, and they had a great start last week. Well, obviously, we were playing the worst team in the league last week. Sorry, Jags fans, again. But this will obviously be a tougher task. They obviously have home field advantage this time against Cowboys. But I actually quite fancy the Chiefs to go 2-0 here over the Cowboys.
I'd say the same, simply because I'm a believer in Alex Smith, and I think he's gonna pull it off. You know, Cowboys fans joke themselves that we always shoot ourselves in the foot, so they're actually expecting to lose this game. Also, Arrowhead Stadium, sort of like the Eagles, there'll be a wee bit of buzz around it now. It's a really tough place to, you know, play. It's loud, loud crowd noise, and yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, and in some ways my head is telling me that the Cowboys will win, but I can't shake the feeling that the Chiefs will steal a close one.
And then we have what I think is all makings of another pretty interesting close game. This time it's the Indianapolis Colts playing host to the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins with that impressive victory last year. I mean, they obviously spent so much money in free agents. I think it was $100 million, something I heard them saying on the show last week. And they really have a point to prove that it was worth it. And I predicted them last week against the odds, perhaps, and they overcame the odds last week. And I've got a feeling they're going to do it again. Obviously, this time they've got Andrew Luck. Defense's Andrew Luck and Co. to face up against. But I'm going to make what might be a surprise pick here, but I think the Dolphins will come away from Indianapolis with the victory.
Up until yesterday, I would have said the same as you, but I've sort of changed my mind. I'm going to support the Colts here. I just think Andrew Luck's better than Ryan Tannehill. And if you're going to be in a shootout, which I think this game could be kind of like that, maybe like both teams getting over 30 points, I just like Andrew Luck. I think he always seems to be quite sort of, you know, cool-headed and get the job done. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins win, like I say, because I thought it up until yesterday, but something's just telling me, despite the fact that the Dolphins have an advantage in defence, we probably have an advantage in the running game, I'm just putting my trust into Andrew Luck here. And obviously Coach Pagano and, you know, that coach staff, and just finding a way to slow down Cameron Wake, slow down whoever else is coming on that D. And I think the Colts could win by a field goal or so.
And we'll switch things up a wee bit now. I'll let you go first to predict the Houston Texans hosting the Tennessee Titans.
Tennessee Titans, great victory for them last week, you know, beating the Pittsburgh Steelers. Although the Steelers aren't maybe the same force, you know, they were, it's still a big win. That being said, Texans have had the Titans number for a few years now. Texans just came, you know, with an almighty comeback a couple of days ago, and home field advantage, better team overall. I think the Texans win, although hopefully the Titans can show something, because I like them as a team, but I expect the Texans to win quite comfortably.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope the Titans don't bother turning up and the Texans have it easy, but sadly that's certainly not going to be the case. It's going to be a tricky one for the Texans, so obviously tougher games, but the Titans certainly are no pushovers. I think that the momentum, the team spirit that the Texans showed in the latter stages of that game last weekend, I think that will carry over into this one. I think the team spirit looks stronger than ever there. They've got Brian Cushing back. They missed him so much last season. He really is a new signing. And as long as he stays healthy, I still think they need another linebacker in there for the Texans, but Brian Cushing back, that will do just now. Matt Schaub, I thought, looked pretty good on Sunday. He always does until he gets the playoffs, so as long as that continues for now, then when we get to the playoffs, we can have a look and see where he is then. But I don't really see any way that Houston aren't going to win this game in front of their own fans. Excuse me. And then we go on to what is another interesting one. It's the Packers hosting the Redskins. What way do you see this one going?
Packers Redskins. After seeing the Redskins there, I can't pick them. Aaron Rodgers at home, first game at the Lambeau, you know, looking for a little bit of a resurgence after being beat down by the 49ers a little. I can't see past the Packers at all.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, if RG3 looked convincing at the top of his game, I think this one be looking a lot closer, but basically just summed up there, the Packers aren't going to lose this one, and Rodgers will probably dominate the game. And then we've got the Ravens hosting the Browns, and really I don't think there is any other option for the Ravens other than to win this game. Their fans, I think everyone's really surprised, as you mentioned earlier anyway, at just how easily they were bowled over by Peyton Manning and the Broncos last week. Obviously there'll be no Peyton Manning this week for them, which they'll be delighted about. And I really think home advantage, the first competitive game back following their Super Bowl victory, a new team who wants to make an impact, I really can't see past them in this game. And I think it'll be relatively comfortable, I think, this. Maybe a touchdown or two here, but it's going to be the Ravens.
I think pretty much the same. Of course, you know, obviously the Browns could shock everyone, but if there was one game I felt quite comfortable with, I thought it was this one. So I do think the Ravens will win, and I think it will be by like 20-odd points.
Wow. Now we'll see about that one. And next up is the Buffalo Bills. They are home this week and they are playing the Carolina Panthers. And the Bills will be absolutely gutted that they didn't edge that victory over the Patriots last week. I mean, obviously, we were watching the game on Sunday night and the Bills score flashed up and I was convinced it was over. I was really happy for them. Then the next time, the Patriots had all of a sudden managed to sneak the game. So the Bills, it could work either way for them. They could be absolutely buoyed by how well they played against one of the biggest teams around, against Tom Brady, how close they fought them. Or they could just go our way, thinking they were so close to what would have been a momentous victory that was snatched away for them. So it could work either way, but E.J. Manuel, decent outing last week. Robert Woods as well, another rookie, caught a touchdown pass. C.J. Spiller in there, numerous top offensive players. And I think on this occasion, that'll be too much for the Panthers, and I fancy the Bills to get the home victory.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think the Panthers are a better team overall, but it's sort of a pick'em game. If the Panthers were at home, I'd maybe swing for them, but I've not seen enough from Cam Newton. He didn't do enough last week, really. I mean, to lose a game when the opposition only scores 12 points, I believe, means the offense isn't doing particularly well. And like I say, if it was played in Carolina, I'd probably pick the Panthers, but I really don't know who to choose, so I'm just going to go for Bills because of the home team.
And then we've got the first game that is on Sky Sports this Sunday, and it's a pretty exciting rivalry game as the Chicago Bears play host to Adrian Peterson and the Minnesota Vikings. And this is a really tough one to predict because I think the Bears, they're looking pretty good at the moment, in all fairness. I mean, again, they're another team that aren't going to, you know, make major waves this season. They're not going to win the Super Bowl, but they've improved from last season. They obviously got a pretty impressive win last week over Cincinnati, and it's another home game for them this weekend. But this week they have Adrian Peterson to contend with, although as you alluded to earlier, Adrian Peterson, it's frustrating seeing him in there because he's better than the rest of his team, and especially quarterback, so that sort of brings him down a level, unfortunately. This one, I think, is really tough to call, but I'm probably going to just say that the Bears are going to edge this one this week. And reasons, home advantage is the best thing I can come up with here, because I really do expect this one to be tight. I think this could be a game where you're looking at a field goal to nick the victory here.
Yeah, I think it'll be slightly more than that. I think in a division rivalry, it's always going to be a really, you know, these two teams are always really physical with one another. It's always quite an old-fashioned game to watch, but I actually really like this rivalry. I enjoy watching the games, even though we're not always the most high-scoring. I think Peterson will get his yards. I think he'll do well. But overall, Jay Cutler is a bit of an enigma, but I'd still take him over Christian Ponder any day. And simply because of the quarterbacks and home field, I've got tight game, maybe just one touchdown, maybe 3 points like you suggested. But yeah, I think I've got the Bears, because I just don't see how Christian Ponder against that tough Bears secondary can really do much damage.
Now, the New Orleans Saints obviously had an important victory last week over the Atlanta Falcons and on their home stadium. They're on the road this week, and they go to Florida, they go to Tampa to face Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This one, again, it's going to be another close game, but I actually think that the Saints will sneak this one another way from home. The Bucs, certainly, that is not an easy place to go, but fancy Breeze to pick things up this week. As I said, I liked what the offense did. The defense is looking just as impressive, and I think New Orleans could be set for a pretty impressive season, and I think it continues this week.
Yeah, I mean, if I did pick the Bucs, I'd be picking them for the sake of it, because we have no evidence to suggest we should win this game. We were terrible last week, whereas the Saints were pretty good, and I just don't see any reason that, unless Tampa come out of nowhere and just play so much better after the rollicking I'm sure the coach Shiano gave them, I just see the Saints winning this and quite comfortably too. So I'd say Saints by at least 2 touchdowns.
And then at the same time as that game, Arizona play host to Detroit Lions. The Lions, obviously, last season were not one of the best teams to watch, say the least. They're pretty grim, in all honesty, but they've picked things up this year. They got that impressive victory over Minnesota last week, and they're obviously on the road this week, and I firmly expect them to get another victory here against the Cardinals. Detroit Lions for me.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that. A lot of people are going for the Cardinals because we've got the quarterback now, you know, to get the ball to Fitzgerald. And yeah, they played well away to the Rams last week and arguably should have won the game if, you know, they kept their foot in the gas. But I'm sort of tipping towards the Lions here, not by much, but just simply because the Cardinals' defence doesn't seem to have much of a pass rush. We're missing Darrell Washington badly from what I've heard, and you know, that three-headed monster of Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson, Reggie Bush on offense, it's pretty impressive. And I just think, yeah, although it's not sort of set in stone and a lot of people are going the other way, I do think the Lions will come out with a victory there in Phoenix.
And then the excitement will just be too much to handle in Oakland as they welcome Jacksonville, arguably the two worst teams in the entire National Football League at the moment. In fact, not even arguably, they are the two worst teams. So who knows what this game's going to throw up. It's going to be competitive, I suppose you can say that, but what sort of quality it will be, that's another thing. I find this one really tough to predict because both teams are so bad. but I'm just going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars, not because I'm a Jacksonville fan, but because I think Chad Henne is going to go in there, and he really needs to make an impact if he wants to win that starting quarterback job. The two teams are so bad that I can't really make a proper case why they're better than the other, and that's pretty much as good as I've got. Jacksonville victory.
Yeah, well, I'm going the opposite way here. I'm going to go for Raiders. The same as you, I can't think of any huge reasons. It's just home field advantage. You know, the Black Hole's a pretty tough place to play, and I think the fans will be quite... It sounds weird to say we'll be excited over a loss, but I don't think they surprised. I don't think they expected, and they'll be surprised that their team ran the Colts so close, you know, away from home. And Terrell Pryor is sort of like a rubbish Colin Kaepernick in the sense that he's a similar size and he can run the ball. He's not got the best arm talent in the world, but I just think he'll make just enough plays, and I think Darren McFadden will have a decent game. And just overall, the Chiefs in most phases of the game had, you know, had dominant spells away from home against the Jags, and I don't see, even if Henne plays, how much that changes. Both, you know, they're both bad teams, like you say, so the Jags could easily come away with a win, but it'll either be a close Jags win, or I think it'll be a pretty large margin of victory for the Raiders, and I'm going to go for the latter there. So I think the Raiders will win maybe by, I think it'll be quite a few points actually. I think the Raiders could win something like 40-20 something.
Oh,
yeah.
That is grim.
Yes, when the Raiders score 40 points on any team, you know you're bad.
Well, it's not happened yet, so
count your chickens. But it will. I am the best predictor here.
Now, kicking off at the exact same time as that game, it can't really live up to that one, let's be honest about it, because all that's on offer is Manning v. Manning, Giants against the Broncos. I mean, it's such a meaningless nothing game. I'll just let you start with this one.
Broncos win for me. Giants can always come out of nowhere. You can't ever really count them out. But once again, I'd be guessing it's sort of like me just randomly going for the Giants. On the basis of the last two performances from the teams, 7 touchdown outing for Peyton Manning. You know, with Eli Manning and the Giants offense just looking out of sync, I have no other option but to go for the Broncos.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Peyton Manning last week was an exceptional performance. There's no way he's going to drop performance levels badly enough in a week that he's going to end up costing the team the game. He's going to have another strong outing. Eli, on the other side, really is looking poor just now. After what Peyton Manning did to what is a pretty decent-looking Ravens defense on paper anyway, what he can do against a very shaky-looking Giants defense is quite scary, and I expect the Broncos to come away from New York with a pretty convincing victory here. And I know what you said, it'll be close. I don't think so. I think the Broncos are going to win this by a couple of touchdowns again. And that brings us on to what has to be the biggest game this weekend. That's two teams that despise each other. So again, the 49ers involved. So I'll let you take this in a way. It's 49ers at the Seahawks.
Yeah, well, I'm never going to pick against the 49ers. So obviously I'm going to say they're going to win. It's one of those games for most people, if it was played, you know, at San Francisco 49ers home stadium, people would go for the 49ers. If it was in Seattle like it is, we'll go for Seattle. And I can see why people think it's a pick'em game. But the reasons I'm going to go for the 49ers are, one, I understand the Seahawks dominated the 49ers last year. But the fact is, the 49ers had just beat the Patriots in Foxborough, dominated them in a way, you know, that no other team had done for a while. Also, we didn't need to win. Seahawks needed to win. So I don't know if motivation was a factor. Here, everything's there to play for both teams, so I think it'll be a different motivation. I also think that Kaepernick, etc., will be out to prove people wrong after he struggled. And I just can't, you know, I need to go for the team I support. I also noticed that over the off-season, the Seattle D-line has got smaller, whereas the 49ers' offensive line is sort of seen as one of the more nasty ones in the league, full of big guys, even by offensive lineman standards. So I just think after they had a crap, you know, attempt at a run game against the Packers, I can see a big sort of comeback in the run game here, because it's the best way to sort of neutralise the crowd noise. Obviously, you know, I can admit Seattle have the best fans in the NFL, so that will neutralise that. And I think Kaepernick will have another big game, and I reckon the 49ers will pull it out somehow.
I think this one's going to be really close. It's certainly, it's after Manning v. Manning, but still I think it's the most exciting game this weekend. the forums are up in arms, the players themselves, who knows what sort of mindset they'll be in. It's just huge. Arguably the two best teams at the moment, two of the most fancied teams in terms of Super Bowl hopes in the entire NFL, going head to head, the rivals, etc. Russell Wilson against Kaepernick, it really does have the makings of an exceptional game, and I just hope more than anything, more than the result is, and it's just not a letdown, and it is a game that we all hope it is going to be. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks here. I found it really difficult to pick a team out of this one. Last week, obviously, I want to sit on the fence. I'm still perched high up there in terms of this one because the 49ers are looking very, very strong at the moment. Really impressive last week against the Packers, even though they didn't quite, you know, reach the heights we know their game can be. They still look comfortable. They got there in the end. Bolden looked good. But the Seahawks, with those fans behind them, their own stadium, point to prove. Last week, they sneaked past the Panthers. They'll be determined to come out and have a bit more of a say in terms of scoring points in the game. This one's going to be really close. I think it could be a bit of a shootout, but I'm going to go with the Seahawks here. And that brings us to the final game. I've somehow got my schedule in German, so apparently it's on Montag as opposed to Monday. But so on Montag Night Football, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, the Steelers seem to sort of lose talent every year. Obviously, they still get Big Ben Roethlisberger in there, top quality quarterback. But last week, they lost out to the Titans. I think going to the Bengals are a team that also obviously lost their opening weekend game, but I think their offense is looking pretty dangerous. They obviously got AJ Green in there, Benjarvis Grunellis, pretty formidable players to come up against. And when I say they lost the game, it was very, very close indeed. I think it was a field goal in the end, or certainly 3-point margin that cost them the game. So in our preview shows, I said I fancy the Bengals, pretty successful season, probably make it to the playoffs, and I think we'll get the first victory here. It's going to be a close game. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a similar score to the Steelers game last week, where the winning team only had 16 points. But I fancy the Bengals to edge this one.
Yeah, once again, the Steelers showed me nothing last week, so there's no reason I can go for them. They might do it for all I know, but Bengals put up a good fight and, you know, had a chance to win the game. Steelers done, you know, sweet nothing, so yeah, Bengals by a couple of scores is my only possible prediction right now.
Excellent. Now, that's the game predictions out of the way, but I think it's only fair that we have a few bold predictions to make in this weekend. And my first one is that Tavon Austin is going to have a breakout performance this Sunday. I'm waiting for it to happen, and I'll keep saying this every single week until the little man has it. I don't think his team will win the game, which is maybe what makes this an even a ridiculous prediction, more than a bold prediction, but I expect him. You'll see him in red zone numerous times. He's going to score touchdowns, he's going to make the yards, he's going to make the important plays, and he's going to be the man as far as the 49ers, the Rams are concerned this weekend.
Yeah, it's okay, everyone has the 49ers on their heads, you know, in their brain, they're that good, but I've got three bold predictions. The first one is that the 49ers will rush for over 300 yards against the Seattle Seahawks. We rushed for less than 100 last week. Obviously, it was all with over 400 yards passing for Kaepernick, but I think we'll get back to the run game. 300 is a lot. I think we only done it once last season against the Jets of all teams, but I think we'll do it. Second bold prediction, maybe not so bold, but I mentioned it before. I think the Raiders go over 40 points in this game. I think we're just going to absolutely dominate the Jags because the Jags are rubbish, as are the Raiders, but you know, Jags are even worse, so I'm going to say that. And third bold prediction, maybe not so bold, but I think AJ Green, after what I've seen against the Bears, I think he goes over 200 yards receiving. And just after Anquan Boldin does it, I think AJ Green falls to it for the Bengals against the Steelers.
Yo, my second bold prediction,
similar to that one, and it was that Boldin will complete the 200 yard marker again this weekend.
Again?
Yes.
Against the best secondary in the NFL?
Yes.
Well,
it is bold. Again, like my first one, it may be stupid, but you know what? I think he's a man on form just now. Last week, excellent performance. And you know what? Yes, he's against Seahawks secondary. Yes, he's away at the Seahawks. And yes, I think they're going to lose the game. But why not?
That's I'd be happy if he caught two balls.
Well, you'll be delighted on Sunday. And yeah, my final one is that the Dolphins will beat the Colts by more than 3 touchdowns. Not so much bold, just something I hope will happen because I like the Dolphins and I want to move to Miami and I love the Rock. Is that a good enough reason?
It won't happen, but yeah, it's good enough.
Great. Now we'll move on to the regular Kevin Cadle feature that I promised, and it is called this. So yes, as Kevin said there, who is the man of the week as far as you're concerned, Colin?
Man of the week, can I pick two? I mean, maybe just with Colin Kaepernick and Quinn Bolden sort of combination, but Quinn Bolden in particular, first real game with his new team, just everything he'd done was amazing. And yeah, so definitely Quinn Bolden for me.
Yeah, well, mine I think is pretty predictable. Brian Cushing back from that injury that kept him out all of last season. And he's back now, and he certainly made an impact. He made the most important play of that game, catching that stray Philip Rivers pass. Yes, Philip Rivers threw another stray pass, and he caught it. He went over the touchdown, and that just got the Texans in the prime position to go on and win that game, which he did. So my man of the week is definitely Brian Cushing. Now, we just have enough time left to talk about this week's college football games, although I say games, there's only really one place that we should be talking about this week, and it is Aaron Murray, no it's not, it's AJ McCarron versus Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel, who's already been talked about a ridiculous amount this season, and also, he's going to have his own camera this weekend. CBS Sports are debuting with Johnny Cam for this game, I believe, so who says the American media isn't obsessed with them, but I mean, obviously it's Texas A&M, it's Alabama, the biggest game of the season so far in college football. How much are you looking forward to this one?
Very much so, and I might add, I think you should have your own Johnny Cam. I just think your day-to-day life would be so interesting, but you know what, I think the game, obviously a lot of people are going for Alabama to win, and I can see why. I think it'll be a close game. I want Texas A&M to win. I'm urging them to win. And over the last sort of day or two, I've started sort of leaning more and more towards Alabama, simply because I've seen the offensive performance and read about it so far, because Texas A&M haven't really played any good teams, so have not been on TV. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Bama, but it's going to be such a good game. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, Manziel shocked Alabama Nation last time away from home in Tuscaloosa, toughest place to play. He pulled it off, and obviously he's got unrivaled hype. I don't think there's ever been a college player that's received that sort of, the accolades and Heisman Trophy winner as a freshman. And it's just going to be an amazing game. But overall, I'm really impressed by the slate that we have on ESPN. UCLA, Nebraska, Brett Hundley versus Taylor Martinez. The early game on TV, that'll be a great game too. Then, there's other big games as well. You know, Auburn, Mississippi State, that should be a nice one. And overall, yeah, I think it's a great week for college football. But definitely the headline act is Texas A&M hosting Alabama, hoping that they can actually prove people wrong again and stop the sort of resurgence from an anger, I'm guessing, from Nick Saban that he was outcoached last time.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly really going to be an enthralling game. Alabama, it's difficult to see past them these days, but you know what, since there's no official prediction league going for this one, I'm just going to sit on the fence and I'm going to sit on it and I'm going to enjoy this game. Just another couple of points in terms of the college game before we go. I mean, I just want to ask you your opinion on Clemson here, because before the season started, I mean, also we spoke to Taj Boyd, Sammy Watkins as well came on. They're a team that were sort of considered to have a chance to be up there, but for some reason people didn't quite see them as being there, if you know what I mean. They were sort of talked about as being there or thereabouts in terms of the national championship game, but nobody really overly fancied them. But their start of the season, they obviously beat Georgia in that massive opening weekend game, and then another convincing victory last week against South Carolina. I mean, they've obviously got the weekend off this week, so it gives us a wee chance to talk about them. But do you think the Clemson Tigers are now beginning to look like a real threat in terms of the national championship?
Yeah, I've said it from the beginning, my two favourites at the start of the year, both because I don't like Alabama and because I think they've lost quite a lot of talent in the offence.
My two favourites were Oregon and Clemson. I also thought that Stanford had a chance. And I think people sort of thought all Clemson had was offence. All they had was Taj Boyd, but I think they've got more than that. I think Taj Boyd has improved, if it's possible, from last season. And yeah, I definitely think Clemson, you know, their schedule isn't easy, but at the same time, I think we'll be considered the favourite in the rest of our games this season, so I hope to see them in the National Championship.
Yeah, I certainly hope to see them go as far as possible as well. Obviously, Taj and Sammy, we'd like to get them back on, and hopefully we'll do soon. But speaking of Taj Boyd, there's another quarterback that, well, this is a wee while ago now, but we also recorded earlier last week, so didn't get a chance to talk about him, but Jameis Winston, the young 19-year-old quarterback of Florida State, I mean, he was widely considered a huge prospect coming into that opening game, and it's safe to say that he dazzled against Pittsburgh in that 41-13 victory. I mean, obviously, you've watched college football for a few years now. You've seen young quarterbacks come in, the likes of Manziel, others that have come and gone now. How highly, from what you've seen so far, do you rate Jameis Winston?
Very, very good player. To be honest, I hadn't really seen him play, obviously, because it was his first game. So I think he was sort of stereotyped because he's 6'5 and athletic and stuff. And he was getting compared to sort of, you know, dual threat quarterbacks. But to me, he looks more like a pure passer. Yes, he can move a little bit, but he sort of reminded me of a Taj Boyd almost, just a big version, in the sense that his arm talent far outweighs his athletic ability. He doesn't have to run. Yes, he has that ability, but I was shocked that he had so much command of the offence, considering it was his first game. And yeah, I think you're looking at, you know, already a star in college football, because even though Pittsburgh weren't the most, you know, they're not the most fearsome competition, they're not, you know, just dead weight sealer. They're not someone you can just look at and go, well, they're a pushover. Some people genuinely thought they would give Florida State a game. And yeah, I don't think the rushing attack for Florida State was particularly good. We put the full playbook in the hands of Jameis Winston, and I think, you know, it's Sean, and I can't wait to see him against teams like Clemson.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to pick up on that you sort of touched on there was the fact that it was his first game. I mean, obviously, because it was so impressive, everyone's sort of been through the roof in terms of expectations and what people think he's going to do, etc. So, I mean, we've got to remember, I mean, he's 1994 born, he's 19, he's still very young, very raw, but I mean, if he can continue what he did in that first game, and obviously Florida State had the weekend off last week, so he still has had only that one game, so who knows what will happen, but certainly if he continues that level of performance, we're looking at a surefire first rounder when the draft comes and however many years it's going to be for him, but certainly a very exciting prospect and one I'm really looking forward to seeing on the field again. So that just about ends it. Also, a big thanks to Dan Scooter for coming on early and giving us that interview. Hope you enjoyed that as well as the rest of the show. Just a few things left to do. Follow us on Twitter at PressCoverageB2, at Jonathan J. Moore, and at CLamitSport. And we should have a few interviews lined up for you next week in terms of college game, but more will be revealed on the day. So all that's left to be said is from Colin.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. See you next week. Enjoy the football.